grandfather tell me how it was when you were young.
Good afternoon and welcome to Living Permaculture on KDNK. I'm Vanessa Harmony of Colorado Edible Forest in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, here with my co-host Jerome Osentowski of Central Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute in Basalt, Colorado. Our guest today is the owner of a family-run stone flour mill in Carbondale, Colorado, called Roaring Fork Mill. The team consists of Jacob Trumbull, owner and head miller, a.k.a. the mill man. Then there's Jacob's talented wife, Nicole, co-founder and head of digital, a.k.a. the mill mama. Emily is the master baker, a.k.a. the baking bubby. Zach is the head of design, a.k.a. the sketchy cousin. And then there's Otis the dog, a.k.a. chief taster. What a fun family team. Jacob, welcome to the program.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you. And it's so fun being able to have the whole family involved. And my father, actually, Ben, whose birthday it was yesterday, is joining the team in the coming weeks as well. So it's really a fully family-run operation. Everything we've done and created has all been within the family, which makes every day a lot of fun because we just spend with family.
Did you add the new addition that came last week? Or?
I have. Oh, that's right. Wow. Thank you, Jerome.
Way to cut to the chase.
We have a new addition to the team as well, our new 11-day-old son, Beau Trumbull. We finally needed another worker, so we had to make our own. And he is here. It is wonderful to have him. He's very sweet. So if I am forgetful today, it's because I haven't slept much in the last 11 days. But he's a very sweet kid.
And your father, Ben, does he have his nickname yet?
He does not. Okay. We need to make it.
Right.
If anybody has ideas out there on the airwaves, we are up for ideas.
And then the baby's nickname is probably far to be determined.
It is to be determined.
Well, we talked about possibly sandwiching this episode with two poems or readings. So maybe we'll take this opportunity before we talk about your background to let you read a piece of writing art.
Absolutely. So there's a tradition. I'm now calling it a tradition. I don't know if it was before, but my grandfather wrote my father a book. And when I was a kid, my father wrote me a book. He wrote a chapter every week when I was a kid because I wasn't reading very well. And he thought I just didn't have topics that I wanted to read about. So he wrote a book for us. And I wrote a book. I wrote a poem for our son. And it has to do with agriculture. So I thought it'd be fun to read it because Jerome has a poem he wants to close out the segment with. Mm-hmm. And there is no title. So again, names. If anybody has names for this poem, send it our way. In a field so green, where plants bloomed with glee, lived a little worm who was the key. He'd tunnel and burrow with a twinkle in his eye. I'm helping the soil to make the plants grow high. He'd murble and blurble and glurgle and glug, turning scraps into soil, as worms tend to do. The farmer really loved to lay in her field, her head to the ground to hear what's concealed. Up yelled the worm with a glub and a glob, toss me some tasties so I can do my job. So they added some leaves and some vegetable scraps too, and mixed it all in with a shovel or two. Then he murbled and blurbled and glurbled and glugged, turning scraps into soil as worms tend to do. The farmer stepped forward, her hand held tight, planting her crop that would become quite a sight. It was a heritage wheat seed, small and round, planted deep in the earthy ground. The sun shone bright and the rain fell deep. The seed began to sprout and its roots started to creep. It grew and grew through the springtime air, a tiny shoot with no leaves to spare. As the autumn air came and the harvest drew near, the wheat was ready and its journey was clear. The farmer cut the stalks with a scythe so fine and gathered the wheat in a golden shine. They tied it all up to bring it to town, where the miller would take it and grind it all down. He put it between the granite stone and thanked the field for all it had sown. The heritage wheat was a gift from the past, a link to traditions that forever would last. He started the mill and stood with a smile, looking at the flour that began to pile. It filled the room up with a smell so sweet, the miller said this flour you really must eat. So he took it to the baker who gave it a taste and whisked it away in quite a haste. Its flavor was rich, its texture so fine. A treasure to bake with, he'll make it divine. With a knead and a fold, he works his magic spell. As the dough rises high, it has the best smell. Out comes the bread, all golden brown. The baker smiles proudly as we wait for it to cool down. Sliced up and served, it's a treat to eat. Straight from the oven, it can't be beat. So here's to the bakers who rise with the sun and make the best yummies for everyone. Thanks to the worms and the soil they make, and the farmer that grows crops that taste so great. Thanks to the miller who gives us our flour, and the baker's treats we always devour. So next time you bite into a loaf of bread, think of the field that lies ahead.
Wow, that's great. Yeah. Well, I've just amped up my worm farming operation, too. I just sold $100 worth of worms a couple of days ago.
That's excellent. So, and we appreciate the worms.
Yeah. My license plate is worms.
That's right, it is.
So I think we're all worm aficionados
here.
I
saw you driving by the other day, and I knew it because of your license plate. It's so great.
I love your poem.
Thank you.
I know you'll come up with a great title for it. Great. Well, to begin, Jacob, can you tell us about your educational journey and how the Roaring Fork Mill came to be?
Absolutely, yeah. It was a roundabout journey. I studied sociology and environmental studies in undergrad at Center College, smack dab in the middle of Kentucky. And there's a long, circuitous path, but I ended up at Sterling College up in northern Vermont. And it's one of seven work colleges in the country, so everybody on campus has a job. And it's all the educational components are based around sustainable agriculture. It teaches draft horse management, teaches sustainable agriculture. It actually does have one of the fun components is it has environmental writing as well. But it's a really neat school. How a lot of first-year students at colleges get a textbook. Every student there gets a tool. And one of their first-year curriculum studies is how to manage tools and how to clean tools and sharpen tools. So it's a really neat college. And there's two stone mill makers in the U.S. One's up in northern Vermont. It's called New American Stone Mills. So I learned of stone milling when I was up there. We would send students over there occasionally to learn about grain and learn about milling. And then a few years later when I moved here, my wife, Nicole, who you mentioned, works with the Aspen Valley Land Trust. She's on the board of the Aspen Valley Land Trust. And we got to know a lot of the farmers in the area and more of the farming history of the area. And it was right at a time where I wanted to branch out and start my own business. And I knew it would be in the food space. And we learned that grain used to grow really well out here. There just wasn't a market. People stopped growing it. A lot more people switched to alfalfa. But grain likes cold nights and hot days, which is what we have a lot of the year. So it felt like the perfect business to start out, see if folks in the area were interested. We started on a very small scale, really only milling 10 to 20 pounds at a time and bring them over to bakers to test out and get their feedback. And one of the components we wanted to focus on as well was heritage grain, which is a little harder to grow, but is much more nutritionally dense, a lot easier to digest. So we found our first grower in the area, which is Cooper Means, and he grows Rouge de Bordeaux for us. And as we started to test the market out here, we realized that there was a lot of interest. There's a lot of demand. So we very quickly began to scale up our operation, and now we have quite a few varieties of grain.
What year did you start Roaring Fork Mill?
We started in 2022, October of 2022.
Well, to quote your website, at Roaring Fork Mill, all your grains are grown by Colorado farms using organic and regenerative practices. You have a strong bias to ancient and heritage wheat varieties, as you mentioned, that require fewer inputs and protect topsoil, and all of your grain is non-genetically modified. Are there qualities of ancient and heritage grains that make them require less inputs and better protect the topsoil, or is it just the way the farmers are growing them?
No, there absolutely is. They have much deeper root systems, so they're able to pull in more nutrients into the stock itself. There's a big shift in wheat when they began genetically modifying wheat stocks. They got a lot smaller, a lot shorter. They actually combined wheat with Japanese goat grass to make it shorter. Mm. But their root systems got a lot shorter as well, and therefore they couldn't pull in as many nutrients. And it's really when we started bleaching and enriching our flour as well, because there was no nutritional components to it. It's when people stopped stone milling flour and started roller milling flour, which also extracted the little nutrients that was still in it. So there is a lot of benefits to heritage grain. And one of the things that happened when we started genetically modifying our grain is there was a much higher gluten content in grain. And it's why, you know, I can't necessarily prove this, but the theory is a lot of people who have started developing gluten sensitivities at a much higher rate is due to genetically modified wheat. So there's a higher level of gluten than what our bodies have been able to adapt to over time. So heritage and ancient grains are much easier to digest. If you have celiac disease, it's a different ballgame. But if you're gluten sensitive, you can typically have heritage grains, heritage grain flour. For example, if you go to Europe and you're gluten sensitive, you can usually have a loaf of bread, right? It's because it's stone milled flour. It keeps all the germ and the bran and the endosperm intact, all the healthy oils, and it's made with grain that is easier to digest.
Well, the genetically modified grains also are, Roundup ready.
Correct.
And so they're sprayed, for weeds, maybe once or twice. And now they're spraying them at the very end so that the kernels all harden off. So you're getting three sprayings of Roundup. And at the very end, it's on the plant itself. It's on the grain itself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's also why we focus on organic and regenerative, organically grown grain. We're actually the only flour mill, not just stone mill. We're the only flour mill in the entire state of Colorado that's regenerative organic certified, which we are very proud of. And I believe there's only three or four in the entire country. So moving forward, we really want the majority of our grains to be fully regenerative organic certified. And it's, I mean, we're very proud to do it because our focus is on rebuilding topsoil, healthy farming practices. So to have that certification means a lot for us. Right. So leaving the land and soil better off from where you found it. Mm-hmm. I mean, soil for us is life, right? Soil is life. And if we take any of that away, the next generation of farmers are going to have a very challenging time. So it's about supporting the farmers who are taking those practices in mind and using them.
Right. You know, Cooper was an intern at my place.
Was he?
And Nicole took her design course a couple of years ago
at
Crimpy. But Cooper, way back 20 years ago, we just met with him last week to potentially grow anywhere from 3 to 10 acres of heirloom wheat for your business and for his business on a project that Ecosystem Design is doing in Emma. So
absolutely, we're very excited about it. Our goal is to have about 60-70% of our grain grown right here in the Roaring Fork Valley.
Right.
We're talking with quite a few farms about planting some this coming season, and then as Jerome just mentioned, there's a lot of folks who might have ranches, who might have properties that are interested in starting to grow grain. So Jerome and Vanessa and Cooper and Michael are all working on this project that we're going to be a wonderful beneficiary of, because it's going to mean more locally grown grain.
Yeah, we can take some of that hay out of production.
Exactly. We don't need all the alfalfa. We need some more food that we can eat as humans as well. And I hear all the time at farmers markets and when I run into folks in town what types of grain that they're interested in. So if folks have something that they really want to know is grown locally, like buckwheat, einkorn, interesting grains like that, spelt, barley, let us know. Because we're figuring out what we're going to plant right now. And that's going to be a large portion of land. So it'll be a great opportunity for us as a community to have locally grown food.
Well, rye would be a good one, because actually rye doesn't have a hull or a husk because it's hull. I've grown winter rye as a cover crop.
Yeah.
And you can just take it and beat it on a tarp and the grain comes out without a hull.
Yeah, we love rye. And rye is a grain that's really, you can get regeneratively organic certified.
And you can plant it in the fall.
Soil. Exactly.
So you can actually do buckwheat and follow up with rye.
Exactly.
If you wanted to.
There's actually a great group in Alamosa and Hooper by the sand dunes that has regeneratively organic certified rye. It's called the Rye Resurgence Project, because they've grown potatoes down there for 100 years and they have no topsoil. And every time the wind blows, it's like a Dust Bowl-style climate down there. So there's an awesome farm. Sarah Jones of Jones Farms Organics has gotten all of her neighboring farms to start planting rye as a cover crop and rebuilding the topsoil. Mm-hmm. And it's an awesome project going on down there.
What does it mean that your flours are unbleached and unbromated?
It goes 100% from grain to flour. We add nothing into it. We do now, thanks to the Two Forks Club, which is another local organization, we have a sifter. So we can make what's called a T85 flour, which sifts out a little bit of the German brand to make it a little softer. Some bakeries and some bakers want lightly sifted flour, but most of our flour is 100% whole wheat. We add nothing to it. And even that sifted flour, we add nothing to.
Yeah, you mentioned the wheat berry and the bran and the germ earlier, but can you just give our listeners the anatomy of a wheat berry?
Yeah, absolutely. So you have the endosperm, the germ, and the bran. And that's really where all the nutritional density is, right? White flour that you typically buy at the store that's really light and fluffy, there's no healthy components to that, right? It's just rising components. It doesn't add any flavor. It doesn't add any nutrients to what you're baking. It is why, though, people have a hard shift to stone milled flour at first, because your bread looks a lot different. Right? Your bread's darker, it might not rise as much because of those things that are enriched in flour to make it rise and the extra gluten content that makes it rise. But yeah, the germ and the bran and the endosperm are the layers of the seed itself that has the nutritional value to it.
Well, there's a saying, the whiter the deader, right?
Exactly. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Flour that you get in the store is dead. It's why it has an infinite shelf life.
Yeah.
So our flour, you really want to have within 4 to 5 months, it's good up to 6 months, but you really want to have that 4 to 5 month span because there's a lot more oil in it. It has a lot of natural oils in it.
So it would have a higher fat and protein and fiber content than conventional flour.
Absolutely.
And vitamins.
Okay, well, on your website, you have like 10 different types of flours. You have graham crackers. You have pancake mix. You have, what am I missing?
And we have some new products coming as
well.
Wheat
berries.
Yeah. So one of the focuses actually of us as a business is creating value-added products. So the first thing we have on our website are these graham crackers, which we were selling at the farmers markets all summer to see if people liked them. And I could never have enough in stock. They're always selling out. But there's only a certain amount of people that want to buy a bag of flour, right? There's only a certain amount of people that are going to bake at home. But we still want to be growing as much grain as possible. So we want to find other avenues to put our flour into to be able to grow more heritage grain. So we're creating these value-added products with our flour and other components. We actually upcycle spent beer grain as well. So we work with Mountain Heart Brewery. We work with Carbondale Beer Works. And we take some of their spent grains after the brewing process and turn that back into flour. And we're adding that into our graham crackers. And we're coming out with shortbread cookies as well.
Mm. Yeah. What about croissants? Have you tried that? Yeah.
I have not. I have not. So the baker in the family, which again, this is all family run, is my mother. My mother, her first job when she was in high school was a baker and has baked ever since. So she's developing all of these products for us and we're packaging them and making them and getting them out there to the world.
I saw you also sell wheat berries.
We
so
do.
That would be for people who want to grind their own flour or do people use the berries for other purposes?
Typically, I believe they're grinding them into flour. I'm not positive. It's a great question. But if you want some of our Rouge de Bordeaux berries that are grown right over in Snowmass by Cooper Means, we have those on our website. We can sell you a 5-pound bag for you to take home. A lot of people do have tabletop mills, you know, to just mill a cup or two at a time for whatever you're baking. I think that's awesome as well, as fresh as possible. So if you do want some of those berries, we can get those to you.
And can you describe what your stone mill looks like?
Yeah, it is. Well, it's funny how much our stone mills changed. We started out with a stone mill that went up about my waist, and now it's 9 feet tall, about 7 feet wide. Now with the sifter, it's almost 12 feet long.
Wow.
There's two granite stones inside of the mill itself. I had to build a crane system just to lift them and put them in. They're about 950 pounds each. One is the runner stone. One stays still and one spins on top of it. And they have grooves on the stone, right? And those grooves are what the seed gets almost trapped in and pulverized in. And you can make the stones closer or farther apart based on the density of the grain itself. So you have some soft wheat, which is a white Sonora that makes an all-purpose. Then you have hard wheat, which might be a Turkey Red, a Rouge de Bordeaux. So the density of each grain is different. So you have to adjust how far the stones are apart from each other. And then you have the auger, which drops the grain into the stones itself while they're spinning. You can adjust the speed of the auger for how much grain is actually falling in between the stones. So the pressure of the amount of grain that's in between the stones and how close the stones are together is what makes the fineness of the flour, especially when it's 100% whole wheat. So there is a little bit of an art to it. I have to stand there and listen to it because I can tell, one, if the stones are touching. You don't want the stones to touch because that means they're going to grind off the components of it. And then just how it's spinning, you can tell if they're too far apart. So there is a technique to it.
Cool.
English.
Yeah, you have to put a little English on it.
And what type of stone is it?
It's granite. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is why there's really only two spots in the U.S. that makes them. It's Vermont and North Carolina. It just happens to be two spots that have really nice granite.
Cool. So are there other ways that people can help support this movement?
You know, reaching out if you do have land that you've been thinking about doing something on. I mean, the more grain we can grow locally, the less carbon footprint we have of finding it from other spots, other family farms in Colorado, which is, it's great supporting them as well, but it's really nice to have that localized food system. Talk about it to folks, you know, spread the word about what we're doing and continue to support the farms that we grow grain on.
And Cooper has the equipment to different farms.
Exactly. So we have community grain equipment that we're going to keep building out as we get more farms on board. But we have community grain equipment where if you have some land, we can come and plant it. We can harvest it. We can clean it because we have this equipment that we're sharing throughout the community.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And winter tends to be a time when people attend conferences. If any of our listeners are interested in learning more about grains, are there any upcoming conferences?
That's a great question. We actually have the Colorado Grain Summit this coming weekend, where I will be speaking at a breakout session. It's this coming Saturday, which I believe is the 8th.
Okay, so correct. It might be before our show airs, but still
true.
They can look
that's
at the
true.
Website for the Colorado yeah. Grain Chain.
Yeah, there's a great organization.
Where is it located?
It's in Salida.
Salida,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there is a great organization called the Colorado Grain Chain, where if you're interested in just seeing the map of where grain is being grown, check it out. There's a lot going down in the Front Range. There's also some going on in the Western Slope here. But no, it's a great resource to see what kind of grains are being grown in the state, get one advice about how to bake with stone milled flour, right? They have some great one pagers about how to alter your recipes for stone milled flour. And it's a really great organization that we've been with ever since we started.
Right. And maybe there are some bakers out there who would like to support your business by like being test bakers.
Absolutely.
And recipe
That'd be
producers.
A lot of fun. Yeah. We have a lot of ideas of other baked goods we want to make and package and get on store shelves. So yeah, if you want to test out some of those recipes, that would be a lot of fun.
One of your unusual flours is millet flour. What can you tell us more about that?
It is my favorite to actually mill. Mm. I will say it smells so good. It has a light nutty flavor, and it's the easiest to mill. It's just like ready to be flour. So it's really easy to mill. It smells great. And it grows really well up here, actually. It was one of the first things we started milling. We actually got it from Grains from the Plains, which is a sixth generation family farm, and it's a gluten-free option. We're often having folks asking us for gluten-free options. It's the one really good gluten-free option we have right now. We're trying to find a couple others that we can grow up here. Hopefully we'll have buckwheat soon, but it's really good. It's really tasty. I think when baking with gluten-free flours, it's the easiest to mix different gluten-free flours together, but adding in millet will add a lot of really nice flavor to what you're making.
Awesome. Well, our listeners can shop for Roaring Fork Mill products online at roaringforkmill.com, and you can either select local delivery or shipping via U.S. Postal Service. But you can also find Roaring Fork Mill products at Lever's Locavore in Denver, Roxy's Market Aspen Emporium, and Pine Melon in Aspen, The Hog and the Hen and Fisher Market in Grand Junction, Mana Foods and Plosky's Deli in Carbondale, Two Roots Farm Stand and Craft Coffee House in Basalt, and the Redstone General Store in Redstone.
We're entering a new store in Fruta, Skip's Farm to Market, which used to be in Basalt as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll be going into there soon. We'll be going into Lettuce Head in Buena Vista this weekend when we make our trip down to Salida.
Awesome.
And if there's any stores that you think we should be in, let us know.
Okay. And what about any social media accounts our listeners can
follow? Yeah, we're on Instagram. We've been starting to post some educational videos about what stone milling is, what heritage grain is, and we'd love for you to follow along. It's at @roaringfork_mill.
Okay. Well, we want to leave time for Jerome to announce some upcoming workshops, but yeah, once again, you can find contact information for Jacob and Roaring Fork Mill at roaringforkmill.com. Jerome, what educational workshops would you like to share with our listeners?
Well, we have our regular ones that are listed on our website, crmpi.org. We have three weekend workshops, one in May and June and October, and then we have our academy in August. It's a four-day workshop. The weekend workshops are one day of greenhouse design and management and one day of forest garden design and management. Those are the three that are on, or the workshops that are scheduled. I have a workshop in Crestone, the 26th and 27th of July. So that'll be a greenhouse and forest garden at Gordon Chow's farm. And we're thinking about doing an off-the-grid workshop, partnering with Rob and Ginger Jensen. We usually work together on our workshops. And so people could come and see all the different off-the-grid activities that we have, elements that we have. I probably have 10 different things that are off-the-grid, and so does Ginger and Rob. So we'll spend a half a day at my place and a half a day at their place, and then finish up with a big, maybe a rabbit curry and a goat leg on the scooter.
I've had that rabbit curry. It's good.
Yeah. So that's all the news from Wake Ovagon.
I'll announce the other one. So Month of March, there are two going to be, after our episode airs, there will be two more community pruning workshops. You can register for those workshops at coloradoedibleforest.com. But also at Jerome's Place, we'll have an arborist visiting from March 26th through April 4th. And if any of our listeners would like to come be volunteer agricultural workers and do some fruit tree pruning at Crimpy's Forest Garden, you can reach out to Jerome for more information.
Yeah, Gabe Riley's going to come back to the Valley. And so you can either come and learn from him at my place and volunteer, or you can hire him to come and prune trees. He's been in the Valley. He's a very skilled arborist, and I'm looking forward to cleaning up all the damage from the bears that tore down trees last year and branches. And that's always a great time to work with Gabe and your workshops as well. Do that, and we also accept volunteers, mulching, all kinds of greenhouse propagation stuff, and anything they want to come and do.
Well, it sounds like in the future we should organize some more grain growing, baking related workshops.
I believe so. It's a fun community thing to be able to do. And I will say ACES has been having sourdough classes where they've been using our flour.
Cool.
So there are different baking things popping up in the Valley that is using our flour that people can participate in.
And Jerome's business partner, Michael Thompson from Ecosystems Design, was also excited to start baking in bulk with your flour.
He was over at our mill about an hour and a half ago picking up some flour.
Yeah, well, he just dropped off a bunch of grain from – he brews once a month, and he gives me the spent grain.
Excellent.
He's a great bread baker and a brewer.
Yeah, he just picked up a 25-pound bag of Rouge de Bordeaux.
Oh, great, great. He usually trades me bread for rabbit.
He didn't trade me anything.
Oh, really? Well, he gave me money.
I guess he gave me money. That counts.
Yeah.
And Jacob was so kind to bring Jerome and I a bag of the Rouge de Bordeaux flower grown by Cooper at Shining Mountain Farm. So we're so excited to try it. Thank you.
Of course,
thank you.
My pleasure.
Well, Jacob, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule grinding flowers to be with us on the show today.
I really appreciate it. It was a joy to be here. Thank you.
Well, you can find Jacob's contact information once again at roaringforkmill.com. You can find my contact info and workshop registration at coloradoedibleforest.com. And you can find Jerome's contact information and workshop registration at crmpi.org. And thank you for our listeners for joining us today. I'm your host, Vanessa Harmony of Colorado Edible Forest, with my co-host, Jerome Osentowski of Central Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute. Tune in next month on KDNK on the third Monday of the month at 4 p.m. for another episode of Living Permaculture. We'll talk to you then.
Oh,